The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
Welcome to the College Game Day podcast. I am your fill-in host, Pete Thamel. The great Reese Davis is taking a morning off here today, and there will be plenty to talk about in his absence. Obviously, one of the biggest news stretches in the sport this year has happened in the last, I would say, 72 hours. I guess no story would be bigger than Michigan, but boy, Texas A&M tried to take over the headlines on Sunday when they fired coach Jimbo Fisher, and they will be paying Fisher more than $76 million in buyout money. This is more than three times the largest amount of buyout money paid in the history of college football. Those are in public contracts. I doubt there has been a private firing that surpassed that mark. Essentially, Jimbo Fisher will get more in his first payments in the next 120 days than the biggest buyout in history. He gets a lump sum of $19.2 million, I believe, within the first 60 days. Our Dave Wilson took the drive from Austin to College Station on Sunday night for Ross Bjork's press conference, and Dave is kind enough to join us today. Dave, just curious, what were your impressions in on the ground in Aggieland of the firing of Jimbo Fisher?
Well, I think there's a lot of, there'd been a slow drumbeat of well, this year was going to be a make or break deal. So once they lost to Tennessee and they had a couple of these second half doldrums where they didn't quite get over the hump and people started to turn after Tennessee. I'm talking the general fan base. There were still a lot of people on board. And then, for Ross, to say yesterday that really the Ole Miss loss to him was he came home and he was sitting outside with his family and just decided, I need to call the president. I think it just was like a slow burn that finally just, people had decided this is year six. It's not happening. It's time to make a move. And they just did it. And regardless of winning by 41 points on Saturday night, they went ahead and made the move. And so I don't think there was a lot of surprise. I think there might be some surprise on the timing after a win, but it sounded like more of a slow, deliberate decision than something that was a rash thing.
Duck in neutral, I think, is the phrase we'll probably remember from that Ross Bjork press conference. Dave, just walk me through a little bit of the vibe there on the ground, right? Like, you have this proud program that hasn't won a league title since 1998. They have all this money, they have all this ambition, they have all this NIL aggression. Why do you think it hasn't worked there? And what was the feel in the room on the ground in College Station?
I wrote a story when they hired Jimbo about their history of just trying everything. I mean, they've made these record contracts. Bear Bryant had a record contract. Jackie Sherrill had a record contract. Jimbo had a record contract. I mean, they've tried everything. They've tried the hot up and comer with Sumlin. They've tried, Mike Sherman coming back from the NFL, who had been a former assistant. They tried, then they went for the big splash with Jimbo, and you can't really begrudge them at the time for taking the swing. One of the very few coaches who had actually won a national championship, and to hire him from his school was a pretty big move, just as it was if you think about how crazy it was that they hired Dennis Franchione off a 10-win season at Alabama. I mean, this is something that they've never shied away from. They had Bo Schembechler on the hook for like a day before he changed his mind. I mean, this is something that they've done forever. So I think, in this case, it's, well, wait, maybe it's time to reevaluate. Do we keep swinging for names? Do we try to find the right fit? I think that's been the mood, is like, what are we doing that's not working? R.C. Slocum is really the one man who has had sustained success there. And that's been 25 years since he won a conference title.
Why do you think, Dave, the ambitions and investments have not met the realities at Texas A&M?
I think it's when I reported that story, look, I went to Texas A&M for 2 years and my family are all Aggies. My dad was a car dealer who was actually on the A&M wheels team that donated a car for one of Coach Slocum's assistants to drive. Like, I've been around for a while. And it's been a frustration, everything just never, nothing's ever just lined up right at the right time. You had RC come along right after Jackie Sherrill kickstarted everything and sort of made them a professional, organization. And he beat Texas, five times or whatever. And that had never happened. And then RC takes over and has this sort of steady, sustained success, but the facilities fell behind. They never really had the, you know, they had John David Crow as the AD for a while. Wally Groff was an accountant who was the AD for a while. Sort of like the ambitions were never met by a level of professionalism in the department for a long time. Now, you know, they were professional in a sense, but not in terms of big time football. So I think with Jimbo, that was the chance. Everything, they had built the facilities, they'd redone the stadium. They had a, you know, athletic director that was in the place. And it just, that's been the most puzzling one. I think they hit right at the right time of an Alabama dynasty, Georgia's rise. It's a tough thing and nothing's just ever lined up just right. But the most impressive thing to me is that they've never, you know, they had 103,000 people in the stands for a game against a bad Mississippi State team with frustration. They don't give up. They're desperate for a winner. They really want to win. And I give them credit for that. And at some point it's got to work.
What did you make of Ross Bjork's comments? He obviously spoke for a long time. I caught some of it on the SEC network last night. Thought he was pretty direct, you know, pretty pointed, which maybe some athletic directors aren't. A lot of these guys just put out like, you know, 8-word statements and, you know, thank the coach for their time. And he put himself out there. I was curious what you made of his comments, Dave.
I thought it was what I took away that I thought was most interesting is him saying, you know, this was my decision. It was a recommendation. The president and I decided, the board didn't vote. You know, I don't know what those deliberations were like in that room, but I do know that that's been the reputation, right? Is that it takes a few boosters to make these moves. And Ross is trying to say, hey, look, we're doing this the way it's supposed to be done in a professional way. So I took the fact that he was willing to stand up and say, this was my decision. And he also said the extension was something that he takes responsibility for, that they will learn from and try not to do again. But, you know, I don't know what that situation is like, but I do know that they're making a concerted effort to say, hey, look, we're doing this in a, you know, this is a one line situation and we're standing up and making the decisions ourselves.
So the financial part of this, in my opinion, can't be overstated, right? It is not, it is like cartoonishly more than the 21.7 maybe that Gus Malzahn got when he got fired from Auburn. And that was probably, what, 3 years ago now? Because that was pre-Harsin, maybe 4 years ago. Yeah. But that was considered gobsmacking at the time, right?
And even when they fired Sumlin at A&M and they owed him, was it 10 or 15 million?
I think it was like 11. And 11. Herman was 15 down the road, yeah. So
yes, exactly. And yeah, so those were considered like eye-popping numbers, right? Did he detail, Ross Bjork, in his press conference yesterday, Dave, how it would be paid for?
Yeah, I was just looking that up because his quote was, the finances are monumental. So again, they're not shying away from the fact that they know that this is an insane number. You know, he said the initial payment will be, the 19.2 will be within 60 days, which you wrote about. The 12th Man Foundation is this massive fundraising arm, one of the best in the country at what they do. As a matter of fact, on the field at halftime that day, the 12th Man Foundation presented Bjork with a giant oversized check for $160 million. To go for payments for athletic things. So that's something that they have long, you know, been a, it's been one of their biggest components down there. The 12th Man Foundation is really a massive thing. They will pay, I believe, that initial payment. And then Bjork said the athletic department will be responsible for the yearly payments. And they're going to have,
which is maybe $7 million a year till 31?
Yeah, like 7.2 till 2031. And so he said, look, you know,
it's like Bobby Bonilla's jealous of that payout.
I know, that's what I was saying. I told someone last night they'll be making the Bobby Bonilla payments. But, this is a athletic department that's one of the richest in the country. He thinks there's going to be new revenue streams in the next few years. And he said, yes, we will have to cut some costs and trim some fat in places, but we'll still be a championship funded program.
It's interesting because, you know, watching the press conference last night, he went out of his way to point out that he was in charge, right? That was sort of the way that I took that. Yep. But also there's like there was a 4-hour executive session of the Board of Regents meeting where a lot of this was hashed out. They didn't talk about all 4 hours, but that was on Thursday. And that's when this decision was essentially arrived at. Now, I'm not saying the Regents voted or the Regents made the decision, but that's where everything kind of squared up here. And it's interesting that you need the resources of Boosters, 12th Man Foundation, et cetera, to make a payment like this. And I would just think inherently some of those people are going to have a pretty big sway in decisions like this, right? Like that's sort of how power works in college athletics.
Absolutely. And even if they didn't, they would have a decision about his job if they didn't feel like that he did it right. And so I think you're right. I mean, these are the guys that you have to placate. These are the guys you have to listen to. These are the guys that ultimately decide most of what happens. And so, yeah, I think that I took that away like you did with that, you know, Ross was standing up and saying, this was my call. I made the decision.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So Dave, it's a magic question. Who do they hire?
It is a magic question. You know, I think going back to the earlier part about that, you know, the past and all the things they've tried, I mean, I think at some point, look, Jimbo was not popular with the high school coaches in Texas at all. You know, and Sark gets a little bit of that because they didn't hire a lot of high school guys on their staff. You know, like Jeff Traylor and Joey McGuire have 7 or 8 Texas high school coaches on their staff. Jimbo had 0. Sark has 1 in an off the field role. So those guys were never pleased with Jimbo's tenure. And that's kind of one of the things that happens down here. So part of that is you could go somebody that's going to rewire those connections. But in the NIL era, you don't necessarily need those guys to love you. So I think there's a chance that, you know, I guess that's the question, right? Is like, do you go for the big Dan Lanning name who also has a massive buyout? You know, he checks every box. You know, he even coached at Sam Houston State for a year before going to Alabama. He's been here. Or do you try, you know, the old school? Like I tell people all the time, if you look at Texas and Texas A&M, who have had really, you know, Texas obviously had more success in the past. And the guys that have won there have been Darryl Royal, Mack Brown, R.C. Slocum, those kind of guys in this part of the country. They all are a certain type of personality. They're not all from Texas, but they all sort of got that you have to get everybody together. You've got to smooth over the egos. You've got to manage the people outside as much as you do inside. And so I sometimes wonder, like, maybe it's time to go back to one of those type of personalities. And I don't know, you know, it's a rough year for Sonny Dykes to try to make a, you know, to be in the mix. It's, you know, Jeff Traylor is 22-1 in the last 3 years in the conference at UTSA, and he's doing it with nothing, with no indoor facility, not a lot of booster support. You know, he's been to 5 state championship games as a high school coach. People love him. People love Sonny because they love Spike, and they love, you know, Sonny rebuilt SMU's standing. But, you know, those are probably the Texas guys. And so it's a weird time. Like, that was always the question about this year. There's no Tom Herman or Kevin Sumlin at Houston. There's nobody sitting there that's on the rise that makes the most sense. And so it's going to be an interesting interview process. I imagine these guys are going to all have to lay out their plans and you know, Bjork mentioned that multiple times. He didn't like the plan. He wasn't comfortable with the plan. He wants somebody with a plan. So I think that's going to be the case. Somebody's going to have to come in and say, look, they haven't won here in a long time, and here's how I'm going to fix it.
What about Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, you know, I did think yesterday what delight Lane must have in hearing Ross Bjork say that it was after the Ole Miss game when he decided to call the president. Because Lane has needled Jimbo at every turn anytime he can. including, you know, 2 years ago when I was covering that game when they ran for 400 yards against him, and Lane came out and said, "Wow, it's just amazing we could do that against all those five-star players," you know?
And you have the NFL talent, NFL roster quote this
year. Yeah, all those things. He loves to point that out. You know, I'm curious because Ole Miss obviously, you know, has done well in the transfer portal as well, and they have a lot of talent, and they're a top 10 team, and they can't get over the hump either. So I do wonder, you know, is that going to be the knock that, you know, that's the same guy, it's just with a little more personality.
Who would you hire, Dave?
Boy, that's tricky because I'm a Texas guy. I like the Texas guys. I love the tradition. I love the Southwest Conference. You know,
you like Texas, Dave? Do you like Texas?
I do. I don't know if you know that. So
that hasn't been clear from the subjects you tend to cover that you like Texas football.
I tend to lean into the fact that they need somebody who gets it. I mean, it is a look. It, you know, I've watched since the SEC era. Whenever the Aggies go to a new town, and everyone. You know, every time they go to a new city, the yell leader videos go viral and everybody's like, what is this? And I think the Aggies are just tired of being embarrassed. They're tired of being a laughingstock. They're tired of being the object of, you know, snark. And they always have been. That's why Aggie jokes are a thing. And so you need somebody who's going to come in and be a people person, be a guy that gets it, who understands it. And I think you open the doors to the state and all of a sudden, I'm curious, as a national recruiting thing and in the NIL era with the kind of money that they're throwing around, do kids that grew up in New Jersey or Florida or Pennsylvania that come to Texas A&M, and if they lose, does that affect them the way it does a kid that grew up here that wanted to play for the Aggies his whole life?
Not you if know? The check's clear.
Right. And so that's my thing. They go out and they get in their charger and their check's clear. And, you know, now look, and I'm sure they care. I'm not besmirching every kid. But I just think, you know, the best they've been is when they recruited Texas hard and developed those kids and put a product on the field that was proud and the fans appreciated. I mean, the 12th man is a thing for a reason. And so I tend to lean toward the Texas guys. And so I'll leave it at that. I don't know.
You think Jimbo gets fired if Connor Wegman doesn't get hurt?
I mean, he's lost. He lost four or more games in every year except for 2020. I just don't think.
Sure.
I don't think that was going to happen. I think, you know, you had somebody. I think it built up around him. You watch a chain go in the NFL and look like Marshall Faulk, and you wonder why didn't he do that in College Station? You know, his first game where he got extended action, he was MVP of the Orange Bowl. You see, he was asked just a couple of weeks ago if he needed to simplify his offense for college kids. And he said, no, he's getting them ready for the NFL. But that's not his job. Your job is to be good in college. And his NFL quarterbacks haven't really worked out. And so what is the point if that's the case? And so I think there was a growing sense of, I'm not sure that this guy gets it. You know, Jimbo wears people down in terms of his aggressiveness and his desire to ask for more. And I think at some point it just, you know, the rubber wasn't meeting the road and it was time to move on. And I think that's why they arrived at a 70, whatever, $6 million decision.
Do you think there's a talent exodus? You got the Walter Nolans, the Evan Stewarts, the obviously Wegmans, like there's some good players on that roster. The dynamics of what their NIL deals look like, I'm not sure of. But do you think we see the talent flood out of there?
Were those high caliber players more attracted to the offers or to Jimbo?
Yeah, I think they were to the offers. I mean, I think there was a lot of concern within the building that exodus was coming if they kept him. So that's why it made no sense. So look, it's really, if you look at it, it's a $9 million decision. I mean, if they kept him another year, paid $9 million of his salary down, there's a potential opportunity that a lot of kids were going to leave. Evan Stewart has been bandied about on message boards for 2 years. They've managed to keep him. But, you know, they just don't. It's sort of like, you know, that the big change to get Jimbo to give up the offense and to hire a coordinator, you know, they weren't exactly lighting it up. They had their moments. But it's like there was some sense that did we go from a 1995 offense to a 2005 offense in 2023, you know? And so I think there's a chance that they were going to lose some of that anyway. And so it's really a decision like does $9 million. It's a lot of money to me and you, to a program that draws as much as they do and gets bowl revenue and potential playoff revenue if they could put it together? Does that money, do they make that back anyway? And so I think that's really the calculus there.
Let's shift gears to Saturday. You were in Fort Worth for Texas, really trying to give away the game in the fourth quarter in a very Texas fashion. What is your takeaway now of the Longhorns? And then we'll shift to Jonathan Brooks and his injury and what that ends up meaning, because obviously his absence from the latter part of that game loomed.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one thing that Sark has been pounding the table about is that this team is versatile. Now, they did give up a big lead. I give some credit to that TCU. They clicked. The freshman quarterback dialed in. He was really good. You know, we get to go down the field for the last 6 or 7 minutes. Being down there, it was as electric an atmosphere as there was last year at TCU. It felt like some of the magic was back. And then that dagger, Ewers throws a dagger on 3rd and 12 with just under, 2 minutes left to a 35-yarder, and it just rips their heart out. And so that's the difference in Texas. That's the difference in this Texas team is their strengths are their lines. They've added Mitchell was A.D. Mitchell was a huge add to Worthy. They each have had big days on different days now, and that was something they had to force the ball to Worthy last year. But they're winning it on special teams. They're winning it on defensive stops. They're winning it, running the ball. And so, they've had some big leads in the last 2 weeks slip away. They've struggled in the red zone for most of the year. It hasn't been pretty, but they keep winning. And that's the difference this year is that they find a way. You know, Joey McGuire had that viral speech that got caught last year where he said, "I told you they would break and they did." And he did not mean for that to get out, but it did. But that was the knock. That's been the knock. And this year's team does not do that. I mean, you had the one drive against Oklahoma that was brutal. But otherwise they've been able to hold on. And so, like I was at Bedlam and Mike Gundy said, this is a pass fail, sport. Either every week you win or you lose and you pass or you fail. And, I thought of that a lot watching Texas. It's like, as long as they keep winning, that's all that matters.
So, Dave, you've been kind enough to drop by, and we appreciate you helping us and giving us some insight on your beloved state of Texas. I'm going to leave with a selfish question. Reese Davis and I have a friendly wager, a dinner wager, likely a steakhouse in Houston at the national title game wager. He says Texas is going to win out and go to the playoff. He thought Oklahoma's loss in Bedlam cemented them as a playoff team. I thought they would, to use Reese's favorite phrase, step on a rake at some point, because we watched Texas step on rakes for a greater part of 15 years. So Bill Connolly actually gave us some good insight on the odds of this. Who will win the bet, Reese or me?
And I think it's tough. I think it's tough for Texas to get there, especially. I mean, I think it's going to be a tough, tough game in Ames this week. But you look at the lineup against them, they're at 7. You know, obviously, Michigan, Ohio State will have a big say in that. Oregon, Washington, Florida State. I think it's a tough slog to get there with the current state of the Big 12. I don't think the Oklahoma losses help Texas in that regard. They lose to Oklahoma State, who gets absolutely blown out the next weekend by UCF. And
that was wild, by the way. There's like eight, 10 of those games a year where you're just like, whoa,
there's a lot of the national reputation of the Big 12 takes a hit. I think it's super fun and entertaining because it's like the crabs in the bucket and everybody's always trying to pull one back down. And you go to these places where they care about football, where the crowds are loud, even if the team's not great, they just manage to put it together in one game or two like UCF did. And so it's going to be a slog to get through these last couple of games for sure.
All right. Well, Dave Wilson, we appreciate you joining us. I appreciate you saving me a hefty dinner tab in Houston with your prediction.
We don't know yet.
That is why they line them up and play them. I'm going to leave you with this question. Who will be Texas A&M's next coach? One word answer. One name answer only.
Oh, I mean, Yeah, I would say Lanning. I think Lanning is a if it checks every box. Now,
all right,
we'll see.
Dan Lanning, it is our Texpert, Dave Wilson. We appreciate you stopping by the College Dame Day podcast.
Appreciate it.
The weekend review which this week will be with the great Bill Connolly, is brought to you by Dr. Pepper. It ain't college football season without the delicious taste of an ice-cold Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. I just need a pocket square. I feel like I can do this.
Reese Davis thing, this hosting thing isn't that hard. We welcome our friend Bill Connolly for his weekly Monday spot on the College Game Day podcast. And Bill, who is the maestro of predictive metrics and SP Plus, we're going to throw that out the window, Bill. We're just going to talk the carousel because the carousel, after a very quiet, it was the first time in a decade there hadn't been any firings at, you know, the November point in the season. At least firings because of performance on the field.
Right.
Yeah. Mel Tucker got fired, but we don't need to go back there. The flurry that has come so far here on Monday afternoon, we saw the Jimbo Fisher fire Sunday morning. We saw Andy Avalos get fired later that day. And then this morning, Monday morning, Zach Arnett was relieved of his duties at Mississippi State, and Brady Hoke told his team that he would be retiring. So these are four good, interesting jobs. Different places. It's sort of like a good little college football Yahtzee, right? If you can go from College Station to the blue turf to, you know, the new stadium in downtown San Diego to, you know, obviously Stark Vegas, a little bit of everything. But Bill, we must start in College Station. Dave Wilson just joined us. He predicts Dan Lanning will be the next coach at Texas A&M. I don't know if a $20 million buyout to hire Lanning would actually cost $30 million because of taxes, right? That's how those buyouts tend to work. And there's ways that, you know, you can mitigate and all that stuff. That's again, they just paid $76 million to fire the guy. So I'm not going to put anything past them financially. There's also an interesting question, too, that we can dive into here is Oregon in the Big Ten a better job than Texas A&M in the SEC? So Bill Connolly, who gets the Texas A&M job?
Yeah, first of all, it should be Jeff Traylor. I think he's perfectly built in every possible way. Mm-hmm. When you spend $70 million to get rid of your last coach, I assume there's some sort of baked in desire to make an enormous splash with the next hire, which can then lead you to not making the best hire on the board. And I think that probably penalizes Traylor because number one, he's UTSA's head coach, not Oregon's or anybody else's. And they started this year really poorly, had guys hurt. They have caught fire over the last 4 to 6 weeks UTSA has. And I think, you know, Traylor's pulling off one of his better coaching jobs. They're still in, you know, they're still 6-0 in the AAC in their first year there. Not that they played anybody particularly impressive, but they will. They've got Tulane coming up. So yeah, I think Traylor would be perfect. I assume he is not at the top of the list because he's not a big enough name. And that seems to be the overpowering thing here. As far as Lanning goes, you're right. I think one of the things that Lanning seemed to understand over the last couple of years was that I've got it really good. I can recruit really well, and I'm in the Pac-12 with an easier path towards the top. Now he's not in the Pac-12. He goes from having the best team in the Pac-12 to, at best, in terms of my current rankings, the third best team in the Big Ten. And you can almost say that's kind of a peak situation for them. So now I would say, you know, if he's just looking at pure job security and uniqueness and everything else, maybe Oregon isn't as attractive as it was like 6 months ago in that regard. And maybe it is worth taking on the absolute hell that is coaching Texas A&M's football team, where everybody assumes this is the one. Everybody, you know, it's a great job, even though nobody ever succeeds at it. And, you know, that's maybe it does make it a little more attractive in that regard.
What about Mike Elko? Everything fell apart at A&M after Mike Elko left.
Yeah.
And obviously what he has done at Duke has been remarkable in a lot of ways. I obviously you were probably watching. That was really the only good game Saturday, the only competitive game Saturday night. Yep.
So I think a lot of us junkies found ourselves hooked on the ACC network late at night to see if with a third string quarterback, they could, you know, Duke could figure out a way to beat Carolina, and they didn't. Yep. But, you know, certainly that program, the sum has been greater than the parts. I think that's probably the best way to sum it up. Do you think Mike Elko could maximize Texas A&M?
I think, you know, though, you know, I said Traylor because of his high school ties first, but Elko would be at worst number two on the list, just because, I mean, we knew he was a good D coordinator, but now he's gone to Duke and inherited a very, very a program that trailed off in terms of results and talent and everything else. They were kind of lucky last year. I was kind of reserving judgment because they won 9 games. There was a lot of turnovers luck in there. They ended up, I think, let's see, they ended up just 42nd in my SP Plus rankings, which is still very, very good for Duke, but it wasn't necessarily 9 wins good. I wanted to see what he did this year. They're only 6-4 this year. I think he's pulled off an amazing coaching job. He's made them competitive with 3 different quarterbacks now. The defense is still good. They are just scrapping this year, and they should have won at North Carolina. I would love to see that Louisville game or the Florida State game, especially with a healthy Riley Leonard. I think he's proven a lot. I guess it comes back to the same thing. I always saw, Willie Fritz, anytime his name is mentioned with, and for this job and that job, the fans of that school are always like, oh, well, he's only 500 at Tulane or whatever. And I guess they could even, ignoring all contacts that got him to 500.
They see the previous century of Tulane football before he got
I think
there.
It could be the same thing. Like, oh, he's only 6-4 this year. They're going to end up, 7-5 or whatever, 8-4 maybe. And pretend like that's not impressive when he has done a remarkable job at Duke. So yeah, if those are the kind of, I know those are the 3 headliners. I think, from an entertainment value standpoint, I think Lane Kiffin is a very obvious yeah. move here. I don't know if I would make that move personally, but it would certainly be entertaining.
I think our bosses would like that move.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, that would be
just for nobody pure theater and ratings.
Jimbo
and
Fisher.
Yes, no. that would be there would be some comedy there. You mentioned Willie Fritz, maybe think of Northwestern.
Yeah.
So David Braun made a big statement on Saturday by blowing out Wisconsin. He has Northwestern 5-5 after 1-11 last year.
Yeah.
I'd be curious. You obviously are dialed in on the metrics, like just how different on paper is this Northwestern program year 1 under David Braun compared to last year under Pat Fitzgerald?
Yeah, I mean, defensively, they've rebounded. They'd fallen to 62nd in defensive SP Plus last year. They're back up to 36th now. The offense is, a work in progress.
Yeah. Their quarterback's been hurt. Since September 30th, he just came back, Ben Bryant, on Saturday.
And they've overachieved projections pretty significantly 2 of the last 3 weeks, which is a good sign. And just ignore the Iowa game because that was always destined to be 17 total points or whatever. But that is, it seems like maybe like the ratings aren't good for the offense, just like they haven't been good for Northwestern's offense in almost a decade, I guess. But the fact that he's 5-5 this season with now what is basically a 50-50 shot of getting to bowl eligibility. Yeah.
Purdue, Illinois?
Yeah, Purdue, from a numbers standpoint, they're a slight projected favorite against Purdue and a slight projected underdog at Illinois. So when one of those two get to 6-6, that is a ridiculously good coaching job this year, considering everything. Well, considering the fact that the program hasn't been in good shape for a few years and then considering everything that happened in the offseason, that would be a really, really strong performance.
Yeah. Well, let's bounce around a little bit. One of Bill's great attributes to ESPN is that he knows just as much about Louisiana Monroe as he does about Alabama. So we can duck and dive through a few of these openings. I guess we'll go chronological in how they opened and go to Boise from here. I ended up filing our news story about the firing Andy Avalos and just dug in a little bit on Boise and just ultimately Avalos didn't live up to the standard he quite frankly helped create as a player and an assistant coach there for almost a decade. Well, really almost 15 years total that he was there. So in 5 different seasons under Chris Peterson, Boise was ranked in the top 5 of the AP poll. So not 5 different weeks, like 5 different seasons, 3 Fiesta Bowl wins. Until Avalos' first season, they'd been ranked in 19 straight years. They haven't had a losing season since, I think, 97, when they were in the Big West and Dirk Cutter was the coach. I mean, it's just you want to talk about completely outkicking the means that your program should be. Boise has done it for so long. And this is a little bit what we've seen the last 3 years, a little bit of reversion to the mean. And I'm kind of curious, Bill, what you thought of the decision on Avalos and what you think about Boise going forward, where they made it clear they want to dominate the Mountain West.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, This is one of those hires, like, you have no idea how it didn't work. It seemed absolutely perfect on favor on paper. Mm-hmm. He had all of the background you want from a Boise State, you know, the all-conference linebacker, all that stuff. Plus, then he had gone to Oregon and succeeded as a defensive coordinator as well. So it just seemed like this was the perfect next step, the perfect successor for Brian Harsin. And, I mean, the first couple of years were kind of strange. Like 2021, he takes over. They rank 34th in SP Plus, but they lose a lot of close games, only go 7-5. But that's still, like, you could point to, like, good defense, good special teams. Like,
and they lost that preposterous triple overtime rain delay game at UCF. Remember that game?
I forgot about the rain.
Hank, I was at that game. That's one of the reasons I remember. I left the stadium like 2 in the morning. Hank Bachmeyer, lightning delayed that Bachmeyer zoomed into a class back at school and he went viral for, like, you know, showing up in his, like, shoulder pads and eye black.
That's so, right.
Anyway, random aside, continue, Bill.
Yeah, but I mean, didn't they hold a big lead in that game too?
They did. Right, they jumped out like 21-0, 21-3, something like that. It was a classic Gus Malzahn win. Like, just Gus cannot win conventionally. He's incapable of it.
Means blowing out Oklahoma State this last
Even the blowouts are unconventional with Gus.
But no, like, after that first year, the results weren't that great, but you're like, yeah, I can, this, I think this is fine. And then last year, it was the exact reverse. They won a bunch of close games. They fell to 59th in SP Plus while going 10-4. So after 2 years, it was extremely conflicting impressions. I wasn't really sure what to think. The offense, I really liked Taylen Green, but the numbers just weren't very good last year. So there was a lot riding on this season, and they're 5-5. You know, 3 years in with a favorite son, like, you could say maybe that earns you a fourth year no matter what. But going 5-5 at Boise in this time where, you know, the playoff is coming up and everybody, like, it feels like a big moment to be good at football. And Boise State's kind of had its worst 2 years now on paper that they've had in like 2 decades. So from that sense alone, I get it. I was thinking he might get a third year just on name alone, or fourth year. But I mean, yeah, you're 5-5 at Boise State. That's always going to be danger zone.
Give me a couple names, Bill. Who'd you hire?
Well, who's left? Let's see. So, you know, you got to put on your Boise State hat. Let's see. Is Jared Zabransky ahead? No, I guess not. You know, what's Kellen Moore?
Jared Zabransky pull.
That's right. You know, what's Kellen Moore doing? How much money can you throw at him? That would certainly buy you a lot of equity, but he doesn't have much college football coaching experience at this point, or recruiting experience. So
what about Kirby Moore?
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who lives in Missouri and likes what Kirby Moore is doing offensively, I'd prefer somebody else, but, you know, it makes some sense from a Boise State perspective. But you do figure it is going to be interesting just from that perspective. Are they going to continue to try to keep things in house with a former Boise State player? Do they think it's that kind of special situation, special brew where you have to know everything? Or now that you're 5-5 and probably looking at a 6-6 finish, 7-6 in a bowl, whatever, like, that's pretty average. Do you try to, you know, bring in something new from the outside? I don't know what the answer is there, but that's kind of the biggest question for me right now.
Yeah, I haven't put a ton of thought on this, but just spitballing a few names, like Ryan Grubb at Washington, who is in that league at Fresno, is going to be a name in that footprint. Regardless, I'm just trying to tick off. I think Matt Wells could end up in the mix in some of these Mountain West jobs. He's at Oklahoma off the field, obviously has a good reputation in the Mountain West from his time at Utah State, and did nothing wrong at Texas Tech, by the way.
Yeah, that was funky. This would be the funniest name I can throw out would be current Idaho head coach Jason Eck, who is doing an amazing job at Idaho.
He's done
probably not going to be knowing the relations between Boise State and the University of Idaho. I doubt that happens. But if you're talking about successful coaches in the region, he is doing amazing things right now.
What about Brent Vegan, Montana State?
Super delightful offense, I'll say that much. You never know, like, those Big Sky guys or the Big Sky schools, like, they just like really being in the Big Sky and seem to function really well in that kind of environment. So I don't know what his ambition levels are, but their offense is super fun. Their defense is just hit something really hard on every single play. It's a style that will win you over. So yeah, I mean, if he's interested in such a thing, you could do a lot worse. He's a really, really fun coach.
Yeah, Jeff Choate is a name, I think, you know, with some ties if you're going to stay, if you're going to stay in the family. I mean, look, Brian Harsin obviously is living there right now. that, you know, is that remarriage possible or not? And here's a clever name. What about Justin Wilcox? Things aren't great at Cal, right? Yeah. And that job became much harder. It was already hard. I think it becomes much harder in the ACC. Right. And if you feel like you're treading water there, he was obviously a former Boise assistant, has strong ties there. Is there something to be said for go to Boise, win big, which that program has shown it can do. And then maybe he moves back to another West Coast job, or people have been happy at Boise too. Like let's not get it twisted. Like there's a bit, I mean, Chris Peterson, it's the old Brad Stevens, don't mess with happy, right? Like Chris Peterson was happy. It stayed for a long time. Brian Harsin, another graduate, happy, stayed for a long time. I don't know. Those are just a couple interesting names. I think that that you know they'll be able to attract a good field there.
You would think so, yeah. And I know their NIL situation is pretty high level for a group of five Mountain West, and so maybe. You know, maybe this is a point where you can pivot back and invest a little bit more and still end up being Boise and winning 10 games a year. But this is a major pivot point. I just, while you were talking about Wilcox, you were talking about like a stagnant situation. There's nothing more stagnant than this. Their last 4 years, SP Plus, 72nd, 63rd, 77th, 67th. And in that time, they've flipped all the way around from good offense or good defense, bad offense to good offense, bad defense. But that's about as average as you can possibly be. And I'm sure he knows a lot about coaching still, but it does seem like a time for him to maybe find a new opportunity.
Let's go from Boise to Starkville here. Zach Arnett didn't make it through one season there, but a $4 million buyout, but he could end up as USC's defensive coordinator, by the way, right? Yeah.
Like that's, you know, there'll be a good market for him as a DC. I'm sure his DC metrics in your system were pretty fantastic, you know, during his time, both at San Diego State and at Mississippi State. And he was also at Syracuse for like 4 days, I think. So don't know how much impact he actually had there. But when you take a step back and look at Mississippi State, who jumps out to you there, Bill?
This is one of those jobs where I like, you know, it's a great opportunity, and also you maybe don't wish it on somebody because it's so hard to get everything. Like Joe Moorhead was the prototype hotshot offensive coordinator. He came in, knew, you know, he was an outsider, needed to hire some local guys, some SEC ties, and did what I thought was a pretty solid job. He was run out in 2 years. You know, Mike Leach obviously was his own unique thing. But yeah, Zach Arnett comes in, tries to change, make tweaks to the identity for this team. And that was always going to be a hard thing to do about Mike without Mike Leach. And that falls apart pretty quickly. So, I mean, what as far as criteria go, you know, what kind of P5 level experience, head coaching experience is available right now in the market as it currently stands? A guy who would be willing to go to Mississippi State because, you know, that experience level paid off for Mike Leach, but it's been tricky otherwise.
Yeah, no, it's a really hard place to win. I would think my first phone call would be to Dan Mullen. He's the best coach in school history.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, maybe there was some dude in the 40s or whatever, but like,
Always a dude in the 40s. There was always a dude in the 40s. Yeah.
Yes.
No. I don't know what his ambitions are at this moment. I know he seems to be enjoying calling the games, but
does a great job, right? It's great. Good employee.
So certainly not wishing him off our payroll. I want to be clear about that. But just if you say how do you figure out a really hard job? Well, he did it. Did it for a decade. Did a really good job there. Understood you need to run the quarterback. Understood recruiting and development, right? It's a developmental job. They put a ton of guys in the pros.
Yeah. I mean, at Mississippi State, you know, you're going to be able to, you know, you should be able to recruit very, very high level, very large linemen who you know, maybe are overlooked by bigger schools. You're always going to have that access. And if you're Dan Mullen, you'll probably have access to a good solid set of quarterbacks as well. It is kind of interesting. I mean, he was run out of Florida in part, you know, as Kirby Smart said a couple of weeks ago, he stopped recruiting or whatever. Well, he knows how to recruit to Mississippi State. He knows how to get the high three-star guys who can help him. So yeah, if that was his level, if that was his kind of job, I guess it is open again now, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, we talked a little bit about Willie Fritz earlier. I would just think locally that's going to be, you know,
there. Love Willie.
Yeah, there's going to be some pressures there. The guy's won everywhere, right? Every single step. JUCO, D2, Sunbelt. So you got to think an old crafty hand like Willie could, you know, could figure out a way to win there. And I think nearby, John Sumrall has done an unbelievable job at Troy. You know, I take
such a liking to some of these schools, and I love the job they're doing that I almost don't. I don't want to, like, yeah, Sumrall.
You
would
romantic
be great,
but no, Bill Connolly. You romantic.
Right. Let him stay at Troy a while. He's doing such a, yeah, no, he's, he has SEC experience, obviously, and knows the very specific area that Mississippi State is located in. Seems to have a good feel for roster management, just in terms of what, you know, bringing in all the different pools of available talent, transfers and JUCOs and everything else. And at Mississippi State, having those ties already, that would certainly be, Willie and Sumrall both, I love what they're doing, where they are. And so it makes me kind of hesitant, but they both be very logical hires.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I do feel like you have to be a little bit different there, right? Yes. Like Leach was different, had some success. Arnett was different on defense, had some success. You know, Mullen running the quarterback. Scott Strickland told me this when he was the athletic director there 10 years ago when Mississippi State was hot. He said when they've been good, they've had an offense where the quarterback runs the ball. Like they need that as an equalizer. Yeah. So. And you look like it's just the SEC is not getting any easier with Oklahoma and Texas coming in. So you need to find a way to separate yourself there.
I guess really, the fact that, you know, there are ditching divisions, maybe that makes it easier for Mississippi State specifically, not so much
that's
other
fair.
Teams, but yeah, no, it's, again, this, it does feel like everybody's going through this pivotal kind of, we got to get our act together right this very moment, kind of existential crisis right now. And it lulled me to sleep. We went so long without a firing in this regard that I was not prepared for what happened yesterday morning. Yes. Trying to write a recap column, and every time I look away, somebody else got fired or something crazy happened. So that was, we're making up for lost time here.
Great college football philosopher Kate Thamel has long observed, coaches get fired on Sundays.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Jimbo cost me a trip to the trampoline park with little Teddy.
Oh, no. Well, you know, costs, you know. That's...
Yes. Yeah. No, I would love to go to the trampoline park. You know, see that little rascal run around and bop around a little bit. But it is what it is. San Diego State is a really interesting moment right now. Like what a wild ride that athletic department has had in the last year. You have a Final Four, national semifinal buzzer beater, magical run. You have one of the great programs in all of college basketball for the last 15 years. One of the great environments. And now you have this brand new football stadium, the last jewel you want, to, you know, as you aspired to join a league that no longer exists, right? Like what a weird run. And you talk about the scramble to stay out of the margins in college athletics. Like, is there this great divide coming? You know, they build this new $300 million stadium right around COVID. They barely sneak it in, and here they have it. And now all of a sudden nobody's going because they're losing. So Brady Hoke retires. And that program in a market where you have the Padres, in a market where you have the beaches, right? The horse track, like they are in a competitive environment to draw fans. It's just not, if you grow up in San Diego and if you go to San Diego State, you're not going to all 7-8 home games every year. It's just not the way that town is wired. So who do you hire, Bill, to bring some juice to San Diego State?
The scoringest coach in the market, whoever that is. Like the last, that's been, you know, we all have our ties to history here. San Diego State's tie, main tie is, you know, Don Coryell and Marshall Faulk and all this super exciting ball. Last 6 years, even when they were good, last 6 years, the offensive SP plus rankings, 108, 120, 118, 91, 117, and currently 109. Like even when they were winning, they were playing dreadful, unwatchable football, unless other than, you know, if you like a good run game. They did have that going for a while there.
Well, but they had some unbelievable running backs. They had like back-to-back guys who started 4 years and ran for 10,000 yards.
Right, and it was like Chase Brown at Illinois last year. Even with the 2,000-yard rusher or whatever, their offense still stunk, but he was able to chew up yardage, and that could be fun at times. But they just – they got to modernize the offensive side of the ball. That's the number one thing. Like, it's one thing to be bad. It's another thing to be bad and completely unwatchable. And that's, they've been unwatchable for a while. Now they're bad and unwatchable. And that's just, you got to reverse that. You got to, if you want to put butts in seats, score points, I think is the main advice I have, especially being in San Diego, you know, Southern California, plenty of offensive prospects in that area. Go find some. So yeah, whatever the candidates list is currently, whoever scores the most points, hire him.
What about Harsin there?
I mean, he was certainly, he was more pragmatic. He wasn't just straight up high flying, but obviously Boise had enough talent advantages to score a solid number of points for a while. So, I mean, you know, if you want to tie, you know, offense plus experience, that he certainly has a draw to him.
What G5 coach? Because San Diego State's the best G5 job, right? That or Boise. The two best G5 jobs are both. Who would bring the most high-flying offense that's a sitting head coach right now?
That's a good question. Let's see. As I sneak a peek at my spreadsheet.
Yeah, you can sneak a peek. It's not cheating if you wrote it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, he has no ties whatsoever to the area, and I think he would not go. Jamie Chadwell is the best offensive mind, yes, I think, around.
Well, he's a great name at Mississippi State, too.
That's true. I thought it was interesting that he took the Liberty job. He had some good foresight there because, you know, I don't know what his logic was. I didn't talk to him before he signed those papers. But going to a school that's moving to Conference USA where you're going to have the best facilities and the most talent and everything else, and you're probably going to run roughshod with your awesome offense, that was a good move on his part. I think his stock has only grown, but
not losing helps your stock if you just don't lose.
Just generally speaking, yeah. Otherwise, I mean, UCF obviously isn't mid-major anymore, but they still always have the ties to tempo and good offense. And, you know, whoever the offensive who is his offensive coordinator at this moment, just put him on the list, whoever.
No, it's Darren Hinshaw, isn't it?
That's right. He brought in Hinshaw. They're good. Boise State has still has a pretty nice offense this year. It was the defense that kind of left them behind.
Yeah, Bush Hamden's there.
So yeah, Hamden's there, and he obviously, you know, at Missouri last year, he kind of had a key role in them improving late in the year as well. So that he's got a name. I don't know if they're interested in Boise names. You know, I who knows what the background is there, but
Grubb maybe. I know they're not G5, but Grubb,
right? Yeah. No, I mean, I realize it's kind of, I said, you know, California, you know, lots of good recruits in California, not a lot of good offenses in California at the moment. So you can't just automatically pull from one of those. But no, I'd like to think they're going to invest a solid amount in this moment. But they just, yeah, it's all about offense for me at that job right now.
Yeah. You would think in the portal era, quarterbacks would want to go there, right? Like you would think they wouldn't need a safety converted to quarterback, right? Like you would think there would have to be there would have to be something. What else do you think opens, Bill? Since we're in the carousel here, where else do you think we may be looking? My alma mater likely will open in the next week or two. Syracuse, another place that's sort of been vexing for the last for the last generation, other than that they had a dollop of success under Doug Marrone and then one really good year under Dino Babers. It's been a hard place to find sustained success. Anywhere else you think?
Well, it is kind of interesting. Just like a lot of the teams at the bottom of the list right now in a given conference, either they have successful veterans who might or might not be on the hot seat yet, or first year guys who probably aren't either. But like, you know, what's the Narduzzi situation at Pitt right now? Because they have fallen apart with quickness. And you know, you're 2 years away from a conference title. Him and Aranda both at Baylor. Like, those are two jobs that they fell off after a conference title and then dramatically picked up speed in their fall off this current season. Especially at Baylor, they were pretty unlucky last year with one score losses. Now they're just losing. And so those are kind of interesting jobs.
The Baylor dive really came out of nowhere. And if they don't have that completely maniacal comeback against UCF, almost like historic comeback against UCF, they're really in worse straits.
Yeah, that was kind of a turning for both teams. That was kind of a turning point, because UCF's been underrated all year. They've been a rock solid team, but they're still sitting there 5-5. That could have skyrocketed them. And Baylor's otherwise looking at 2-8 or whatever. I am curious about that. I'm curious about the newcomers that are struggling in the Big 12. Obviously, since he's on a first year head coach, and like I said, UCF's been unlucky, but BYU and Houston, neither of them, especially BYU, I think they thought they might do a little. They might just look a little better. 5-5, so they can still pull off a bowl game. They just have not looked very good for most of this season, and I'm curious what happens there. What about Minnesota? They've been the most inexplicably disappointing team to me. I thought they were going to have a top 10 or 20 defense.
Defense has really fallen off. Joe Rossi done an unbelievable job on that side.
And they just don't have it this year. Yeah. As far as I can tell, like, injuries haven't
And they haven't been able to control the ball on the ground. Remember, they lost the two tailbacks, Irving, and then they lost another tailback to the portal. And I feel like a lot of their defense was because Muhammad Ibrahim just gobbled up yards.
Right. It didn't hurt.
Yes. And they played good complementary football.
But they've dropped about 30 spots on both offense and defense in my numbers this year. And they're just not. This was a perfect time for them to, you know, watch the Big Ten West crumble to the ground and walk to a title, and they're not even going to come close. They got to beat Wisconsin to make a bowl, and that's not something I saw coming. I mean, I would assume he's bought enough goodwill from 9-4 seasons to not be on the hot seat.
Yeah, he's not on the hot seat at all. I mean, he's got a good long contractual protection. Yeah. That's a defy gravity job, Bill. You know, he's defied gravity there. It's a place that hasn't won much in a century. So it'll be interesting to see those lower tier Big Ten jobs and how, by asserting four programs better than the lower tier, they're affected by it.
Yeah, that's also a spot where, you know, I was talking about existential crisis earlier. Like, a lot of the bottom half of the Big Ten is going to be wondering about itself here in the coming months. And I'm curious what exactly that means. Obviously, you know, Indiana is kind of showing signs of life late in the year, but maybe.
Yeah, that's been interesting. Like, because they have a $20 million decision on Tom Allen.
And he's showing just enough that if they don't want to spend that money, because they have overachieved. Yeah,
it's a huge drop. I believe it's $7.5 million or something like that after next season.
Okay, yeah.
That's a significant amount of money. Like, look, money paradigms have been blown out of the water. Before the season, I did a column on ESPN Plus that basically said, this should not be a busy year in the carousel, but don't believe that, because we say that every year and always ends up pretty busy. But if it was going to be a busy year in the carousel, some moves would have to happen that defy historic norms in terms of buyouts. And we've seen one so far. But if Indiana pays Auburn money in buyouts, then we've really, like, that almost might be crazier than A&M. Does that make sense? Like,
it is. I mean, we are certainly living in paradigm shifting times, obviously. Yes. But no, the last 3 weeks they have, they've overachieved by my projections by 17 points per game the last 3 weeks.
And that OC shakeup really was a nice move by Tom. You know,
I mean, I was curious about why he made that hire to begin with. I didn't love that, but he saw the error of his ways, knew he had no time to waste, and made a move. Now they'll have at least a chance in each of the last two games. Obviously, they're not, you know, going to get to 6-6, but they've got a solid shot at four or five wins, which, if you told me that a month ago, I would not really have guessed that. So
when they were in overtime with Kent, that didn't seem very likely, right? Was it Kent?
Akron.
Sorry. They were in overtime with Akron. My apologies.
Yeah, and I know they had injuries. They were showing a little defensive promise earlier in the year. So, yeah, I mean, if you're just really not wanting to write that big check, I think you can kind of spin this to where maybe they can build on something and push towards 6-6 next year or something. But, it's been that whole bottom half of that conference is going to be kind of interesting to track these next couple of years, I think.
Yeah. Well, have we fired enough coaches, Bill?
I'm all for, like, I, you know, I, I, like I said, writing a recap column while the world is, you know, going crazy around you with firings, that's always kind of tricky. It's always disorienting. So I'm all for just not firing anybody else.
All right. That's fair. Yeah. Maybe we can get to the trampoline park on a Sunday.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, that is all for the College Game Day podcast today. We miss Reese Davis. He'll be back with us on Wednesday. And then obviously for our Friday picks pod with Stanford Steve, Ryan McGee will join us on Wednesday as he always does. Bill, appreciate you and appreciate your time today. And, thank you for helping me execute coaches around the country from their jobs.
Anytime.